I spent my whole life in a huddle.
Right.
And he said to me one day, Anthony, if we went to a football game and you just watched a huddle for the whole 3 hours, how would you feel? And I was like, I'd be miserable. Awful, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
He's like, exactly. The reason why you're miserable right now is because you are not breaking huddle and doing anything on the field.
Hi, I'm Ed Stetzer. I want to welcome you to another edition of The Exchange. And thanks for joining us today. As always, we're going to talk about truths. We're going to have some thoughts that are exchanged. We're going to talk about theology. Up this week is actually an insider's perspective about the intersection of faith and culture. And my colleague and friend, Micah Fries, will interview Anthony Evans. Now, you probably know Anthony from his first national notice on The Voice. And then subsequently, he's now released 6 studio albums, including his most recent, Real Life and Real Worship. Most fascinating might be some of the people that God has enabled him to engage with. He talks about that in the interview. Let me also say that he's in a brand new movie. It's a thriller called Caged, which shines a light on exploitation and human trafficking. So you want to watch the interview. It'll be helpful. You can, as always, exchange with us using the hashtag TheExchange on Twitter or Facebook. Before we begin, though, we're going to hear from Afshin Ziafat, who's going to talk a little bit about how grace, understanding of grace, actually fuels missions.
In Ephesians, Paul writes that we are dead in our trespasses and sins before Christ makes us alive, that we are by nature children of wrath, destined for the wrath of God, and that we are enslaved to carry out the passions of our flesh. And then he writes later, therefore remember that you are separated from Christ, that you are alienated from the people of God, and that you are in this world without hope and without God. And then from there he moves on to say that we're brought near by the blood of Christ, and therefore God has made both Jew and Gentile one. And so we see that when we understand where we've come from, we understand how bad the news was, that we were dead and separated from God, and that we were enslaved to our sin, but that God had mercy on us and brought us by the blood of Christ into a right relationship with Jesus, then that propels us to therefore go out to others and reconcile. And so in the book of Jonah, which is a very familiar story to us, I think we see this played out in a negative way, where Jonah, who receives grace, that grace doesn't really propel him to have compassion for others. So you know the story. In Jonah chapter 1, God comes to Jonah and he tells him to preach to Nineveh. Now the backstory is that Amos has already been preaching at the same time as Jonah, and Amos, a contemporary of Jonah's, has already prophesied that the Assyrians, of which Nineveh is the capital, would one day come and conquer Israel. So God is telling Jonah to go preach to these people that he knows one day will come conquer his people. On top of that, from artifacts and things that we've uncovered, we've seen that these Ninevites, Assyrians, were gruesome people, that they would dismember their captives of war, skin them alive. So if you will, this was the Al-Qaeda of the day. And so God basically says, go preach to the enemy. And so Jonah hightails it the other way, gets on a boat, sails for Tarshish. God appoints a storm, and the sailors throw him overseas. And most everyone knows that the great miracle of the book of Jonah is the big fish. Remember that the big fish was God's mercy, not God's judgment, to save Jonah when he was wrapped in those weeds in the bottom of that ocean. And so similarly, the Bible teaches we are dead. We are at the bottom of the ocean. Just as Jonah was on the doorstep of death, we are dead, and yet God had mercy. And through the fish, God saves Jonah. Chapter 2 is Jonah crying out a prayer of praise and thanksgiving to God for saving him. But in chapter 3, Jonah goes to Nineveh. And in the Bible, in the English Bible, he reads, he proclaims 8 words. In 40 days, Nineveh shall be overthrown. In our English Bible, that's 8 words. In the Hebrew language, it's 5 words. And the Bible says he only went one day's journey, whereas it would take 3 days to go throughout Nineveh. So the great miracle of Jonah is not just the big fish, but that God would take a rebellious man and take him a third of the way through a wicked people, and he would preach 5 words, and then we find that the entire city repents and believes in God, turns to God, and asks for God to have mercy. And so we see that that's the great miracle of Jonah, the power of God's word, 5 words. And so I always want to encourage people to say, look, God can use it. You can't say God can't use me. You can't say I don't know enough. Here's Jonah, who just preached five words.
Have you ever been stressed, worried, anxious, confused? Maybe all at the same time? Are you building your own house of cards, and if one more card is added, it might all come crashing down? You realize somewhere in between paying the bills, cleaning the house, tackling that pile of laundry, and dropping your kids off at soccer practice, you've got to figure out what's for dinner, run by the grocery store, and if you can't get to that, then it's a quick stop at the drive-thru on the way home to grab dinner just in time to start homework with the kids. Or maybe your boss told your department that layoffs are coming, and everyone will need to put in more hours to pick up the slack. But you and your wife just had a fight about how many hours you've been working lately, and you know you need this job because you're already living paycheck to paycheck. Perhaps it's multiple term papers and exams all due at the same time, and your car just broke down again. Whatever your situation, it seems like the fight to keep up with life and that never-ending to-do list is something we can't win and leaves us all filled with stress, anxiety, and worry about what else life is going to throw our way. It's easy to let our circumstances trap us and leave us feeling overwhelmed and wanting to quit. But it doesn't have to be that way. It is possible to live a life filled with joy and look forward to what's coming next. A life set to prosper and not to fail. A life filled with hope and a future.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of The Exchange. My name is Micah Fries, and we are really excited. We're pumped to have Anthony Evans here with us today, man. Thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here with you, Micah.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for having me.
We're here in this sort of surreal place, Opryland Hotel. This is a strange venue, but we're National Religious Broadcasters are holding their annual meeting here, so we're glad to get a few minutes to sit down and kind of hang out, just talk about what God's doing in your life. And, of course, a lot of our folks are going to be familiar with you. They saw you on The Voice, or they've been a part of your ministry. They may know that you grew up as Tony Evans' son. Of course, he's royalty in the Christian world, right?
Legendary. Godfather.
Yeah, exactly. He is. That's exactly right. And so talk to us a little bit, Anthony, just kind of kicking things off about your life growing up and sort of the benefit of growing up in that kind of a family, teaching you to love Jesus, but also, you know, sort of the rude awakening when you moved to L.A. and how you realized that wasn't normal, you know,
right,
for most people.
Well, the benefit for me is not necessarily the guy who y'all have, who you know from radio or his books,
sure,
or the big buildings and all that stuff and all the people. The benefit for me was having that guy be the same guy at home.
That's awesome.
That if he was not the same man at home, I would be nuts right now. Because
yeah,
I was already a little bit off because being a preacher's kid, there are already issues involved.
Right.
Like you're in a spotlight that you don't necessarily want to be in, and it burns and you want to get out, but you can't. Like that whole thing was an issue with me, especially because I was more of a shy to myself, leave me alone kid, and we lived across the street, and people knocked on the door all the time, and I was like, well, get out of my life. That's literally how I felt
alone
all the time. Why are you in my life?
Yeah.
So, but the benefit was my dad understanding that, one, and meeting me where I was, but he also, more so, excuse me, being the same guy at home. That's the benefit.
Consistency.
Yeah, him being consistent at home. And What happened subconsciously over the years is because my environment was so Tony Evans, so Christian world,
right,
so NRB kind of moments.
Which is surreal.
Yeah, I got into a place where my mindset started to be like, okay, God has grandkids. Like, that's how it works. This is my world. This is my life. So I can be grandfathered in on my dad's faith. Mm-hmm. And it was a rude awakening, one, when I went to college, but I went to a Christian school, so it wasn't as rude of an awakening as when, as you mentioned, I went to L.A. 3 years ago. I got a phone call from The Voice to be on the show, and it was random. It was right before it started, so all I knew is this is going to be the biggest show on TV, is what the casting director said to me. And I was like, this sounds so Hollywood. I'm about to be on some bootleg TV show, you know? So
filming in a guy's garage.
Yeah, exactly. If only I couldn't do the first season, actually.
Sure.
And I got a call to do the second one and went out there. And my first conversation when I made one of the teams was Christina Aguilera had us over for dinner, which that's not like going to the pastor's house for dinner. It's a whole
exactly
different thing.
Right. Yeah.
And Christina says to me, she's like, okay, so what do you do? Like, I know you're a preacher's kid, but you're a worship leader. What's that? And we're like, well, what's that about? And I thought, she's going to think I'm a lunatic. If I start explaining what the words that are coming to my mind, if they come out of my mouth, she's going to think you're crazy.
Right.
And that started in me this rude awakening of, one, Anthony, your world is one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And two, you were made for moments like this, and you don't know how to handle them.
Yeah.
That was the rude awakening for me. But it also, I guess to call it a rude awakening is not fair. It was just an awakening in general.
Sure.
Because my heart came alive at that moment, and I felt like I was doing what I was actually called to do as a believer. That sparked me doing more of that.
So rude in the sense that it was abrupt, but it was good.
Yeah, it was good.
God honoring.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm with you.
That's what I mean. It was amazing. And she started, she started that thought process in me, Christina. And then I sat down later on with her and Jewel on the show. And Jewel is so smart. And she just said to me, Anthony, I get it. You're a preacher's kid.
Yeah.
But that is the tip of the iceberg for you. I need to know what is going on underneath the surface, because that is what people outside of church are going to connect on.
Yeah.
Your real life emotions, and it's great. And she said it's like, she's just so smart.
Yeah.
She was like, okay,
brilliant
great.
Musician.
You've written songs. Exactly. Yeah. You've written songs about the filter your whole life. We all see life through a filter. Mm-hmm. You've written songs about the filter your whole life. I get it. How pretty the filter is, how great it is. Now I want to know about your life as what you see through the filter. Like, mm-hmm. Talk about your real life, and it can be through the filter, but now let's talk about that. And that, again, woke up my insides to communicating my real life emotions through my faith.
Which a lot of Christians aren't really, we don't have the framework for that. I call it plastic pastors, right? We've had this whole sort of plastics, you know, faith that we've created, crafted. And so I think a lot of us aren't. We have this identity that we experience when we go to church, whether we're a pastor's kid or not, but then when it comes to engaging in the real world, there's this radical disconnect between living out our faith in genuine, authentic ways that just kind of resonates with people is a difficult thing. So going back to your dad as a pastor, you said that what made it real for you was that he was the guy at home as he was on the platform. Eugene Peterson, I heard this quote from him when he said, if you sacrifice your family trying to be a good pastor, you've sacrificed being a good pastor in the first place. And I thought, man, that's really good, because I think a lot of pastors have missed that. So he helping raise you to love Jesus framed in you a spiritual core. But then you go to L.A., you're on The Voice, now you're living there permanently, and you're realizing that there's something beyond just this Christian identity that you had that you've got to be able to connect with people. You talk about you've got a number of friends who maybe don't know Jesus or weren't raised in a Christian home, and so it's teaching you how to change the way you communicate to help them understand faith.
Exactly.
What does that look like practically? How has that changed the way you communicate with them, helping them understand who you are as a follower of Jesus?
Practically, it's so crazy, because I think about the way, again, that I was raised, or things that would happen, like with your tip, you leave a track and it's got fire on it. Like, what are we doing? You know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely.
The way that it's changed is now I've been fortunate enough to be hired by The Voice to be a talent producer. Now, when I work in that environment, there's a few Christians, but overall, it's not a Christian environment.
Yeah.
So my faith is not necessarily the first thing that's out of my mouth. What I have learned is I have to be open to hearing other people's experience. I'm not saying compromise my faith, but I have to be open to understanding their experience and not being, and just being open to that period, not saying, okay, I'm going to understand your experience. So in about 2 hours, I can tell you about my faith.
That's right.
That's not my mindset. My mindset has been to love on the people around me, to really appreciate them. And they see my faith through that. Like, that has provoked questions in me. It has. It's just provoked questions. So I've learned that my job is to love, which sounds so like universe, just say, but that's what it is. That is what has worked for me outside of the four walls of church. And another thing is, I grew up with this. My dad always likens it to a huddle. Like, I spent my whole life in a huddle.
Right.
And he said to me one day, Anthony, if we went to a football game and you just watched a huddle for the whole 3 hours, how would you feel? And I was like, I'd be miserable. Awful, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
He's like, exactly. The reason why you're miserable right now, at that point, I was kind of miserable in my ministry. He's like, you're miserable right now because you are not breaking huddle and doing anything on the field. You're full of information.
Right.
You know the coach. You know the plays, but you're not executing any of the plays.
Yeah.
And the execution of the plays in my life has been loving these folks, and it's always led to faith.
See, I think that's such a big deal. So I've argued for a while that we've kind of created this used car salesman approach to Christians engaging non-Christians, like it's bait and switch. I'm going to be your friend so that I can share the gospel, which is not, nobody does that, right? I mean, that's what a salesman does.
Right.
That's what the vacuum salesman does when he comes
ball.
To your door.
Yeah,
that's
like
right.
A slimy used car.
I expect some guy in a plaid coat and a short tie, you know, selling me something instead of just genuinely being friends with people, because everybody's created in the image of God. Everybody's beautiful. You know what I mean? There's this incredible story, and I love that about you. And so when I was reading about your new album, you talk about how that practice and that desire sort of birthed this new album. We're going to come back in just a minute, and we're going to talk a little bit about your new work and how, you know, this has been a work of God in your life as you communicate with others about just what real life looks like with Jesus. And so we're excited to have you back. We're going to go to a break and listen to a couple of messages, and then we'll come back and talk about this new work with Anthony.
growing up, I learned very quickly that my life centered around, my identity came from simply wanting to be loved. Or that idea I had in my mind or that way of living finally kind of found its home in religion and kind of doing things for God, hoping that He would love me, or hoping that if I was good enough, then all these people would then say, Jeff, you are good enough, you are loved. But then that took me all the way to a season where I finally started to realize it didn't satisfy. Me defining myself by not having sex, not drinking, or not getting tattoos, or all these things, actually wasn't bringing me the true joy that Jesus offers. It wasn't until I got to college where finally I turned to the scriptures and I saw this grace that was radical, scandalous, and could transform my life. It actually could give me the joy I was looking for that religion never could. I realized that the Bible wasn't about highlighting or memorizing my way into heaven, but was simply about experiencing the grace of God.
Our guest today on The Exchange is recording artist and producer of The Voice, Anthony Evans. We're going to continue that conversation after this break, but I want you to hear from Barnabas Piper. You see, Anthony Evans, by the way, is a pastor's kid. I've got three pastor's kids. Barnabas Piper is a pastor's kid, John Piper's son, and he's written a book called Pastor's Kid. I was thrilled to endorse it. I want you to listen to as Barnabas talks a bit about being a pastor's kid.
Hi, I'm Barnabas Piper, author of The Pastor's Kid, Finding Your Own Faith and Identity. I spent the first 30 years of my life as a pastor's kid. I'm the son of John Piper. I want to talk to you today about some of the expectations that are placed on pastor's kids that put undue pressure on them. First up is the pressure to be better behaved than all of your peers. Pastor's kids have an expectation placed on us to live to a different standard. Our peers are held to just sort of the standard of being kids. We are held to the standard of being sort of holier kids. We don't get to get away with the things that other kids get to get away with. And that doesn't seem fair, and it's really not. That's not the standard that believers ought to be held to. There shouldn't be a double standard there, but it puts pressure on a pastor's kid. The next expectation is that of knowing your Bible inside and out, especially as compared to your peers again. That seems to be the comparison we often have is to other kids our age. When I was in Sunday school, we used to play a game called Bible Trivia Baseball, where easy questions were singles and hard questions were home runs, and you divide into teams and you go from there. And I always felt the pressure, even as a 6-, 7-, and 8-year-old, to try to answer the triple and the home run questions, because that's what a pastor's kid does. And of course, when you move into middle school and high school, the pressure is there again, because the teacher will ask a question or a small group leader will ask a question, and there's just dead silence and crickets. And all heads turn and look at the pastor's kid, and you have to answer. And there's a lot of pride in getting it right, but that's not a fair expectation to put on a kid to know their Bible better than everyone else.
So glad to be back with you, Anthony, talking about you know, how God has worked in your life, raising you up through your formative years and then moving you to L.A., and now you're getting to engage the world. And, man, this huge global scale, literally. I mean, one of the biggest reality TV shows, of course, on it as a, you know, a performer and now helping, you know, work behind the scenes on it. You've got this new album, Real Life, Real Worship, which I think is a pretty exciting concept. Talk to us about just the concept behind the album in the first place.
Well, again, the concept was birthed out of these experiences, as you mentioned, in Los Angeles. And when Jewel said to me, as I mentioned earlier, she said, I need to know about underneath the surface of your life, like beyond just your faith, what else is there to you?
Right.
I thought on this record, I want to write songs that are relevant to an audience that is broader than church. So I talk about me being older now and not being married. One of the songs is about that, which is general, like, but that's real. It's real.
Absolutely.
It's honest. It's not always the record is actually, I have a song on it called I Found You that is about my friends in Los Angeles. It's about Jewel and about my boss at The Voice, who has changed my perspective on the way that I view my career. That's what that's, but it's honest. There are relationships in Christians' lives and non-Christians' lives that you are really thankful for, and that's what that song is about. So there's half of the record that is about real life. Then the back half is when I have those questions about, you know, when is family coming for Anthony? I go, there's a song called Ask, which is Matthew 7:7. That's where I go. So real life has led me into deeper worship experience. And I've seen it work because I've had my non-Christian friends go, man, I love your record. I mean, the first half I really get. The second half I'm kind of like, what's this about?
But, what is the deal?
But they listen to the second yeah, half. Right. And as we as believers can listen to the first half and understand yeah. what that's about. So it's been an amazing, amazing experience for me.
One of the things I like about that, man, is that Christians, man, in our little circle, our bubble, we so spiritualize everything. And in a sense, everything we do relates to the spiritual realm. I'm not denying that.
Right.
But we almost seem to completely lose just the natural element of who we are as people,
exactly.
human beings. And so I like your willingness to sort of embrace just who you are as an individual and how your faith influences that and speaks to that. And of course, now you're also involved in a movie, which is even a bigger deal. I mean, wow, yeah. what an amazing opportunity for you. Talk to us just a little bit about how that opened up for you and what that looks like.
Well, earlier this fall, I was in acting classes with had some opportunities here and there.
Sure.
Acting classes with a young lady by the name of Laura Michelle, who was a Broadway, like Mary Poppins on Broadway, that
sure.
kind of.
Yeah.
So I was with her, and she got a phone call about a film called Caged, an upcoming film called Caged, and I happened to fit the description of what they were asking her
That's awesome.
For. So she was just like, have you ever heard of Anthony Evans, the director, Lisa Arnold, is a wonderful woman of faith who knew about me. So
sure.
she just direct booked me for this movie.
That's awesome.
And I showed up on set, my first scene. I mean, I read this script and I thought, this is amazing because this is what I'm about right now, is calling people if you have a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And you do not want to see another human harmed,
yeah.
this movie's for you. But that's also a faith thing, too.
Sure.
Like, as believers,
intimately
that's what connected. We're called to.
Yeah.
And as
that's
human
right.
beings, we're called to that. So it crossed that line of real life and being a real worshiper.
Right.
So
right.
The film, I ended up flying to Louisiana to film this film. My first scene was with an Emmy Award-winning actress named Loretta Devine, who I
awesome.
Walked on
yeah.
set and was like, oh, my gosh. Like, first
what do
scene,
I, do?
I get this together because I just
yeah.
just watched her win an Emmy Award. You know, so
yeah, exactly.
it's a very high-quality film,
sure.
done really well. But, again, it's about calling the audience to action. It's not just to entertain
yeah.
them. It's about the epidemic that we have in our country that a lot of people don't even know about,
yeah.
this $9 billion industry
right.
In human trafficking that's
yeah.
not overseas, that's happening
no.
right here. So it's a fictional story. We've pulled in some facts,
sure.
or they pulled in some facts, but at the end of the movie, it's a call to action.
Yeah.
After you've been entertained with this excellent film, it's a call to action, allowing you to know, letting you know ways that you can
sure.
actually change lives when you leave this theater.
I think this is one of the exciting things, at least in my mind, that God is doing just globally right now, is calling the church to engage in human trafficking and resisting and helping work mm-hmm. against human trafficking. And not just the church, though. I mean, it seems like just the world in general, we see a kind of a rising up to recognize its existence. When you tell people there's more slaves today than at any point in time in human history, I mean, that's,
right.
you know, that's astonishing to people, I
exactly.
think, and that's difficult for them to process. So as you make the movie, Caged, you're talking about human trafficking, trying to resist that. What do you hope comes out of it? I mean, what's the desire?
I want this movie, as well as everybody involved wants the movie. They actually, one of the catchphrases is this is the movie that will start a movement.
Yeah.
I want there to be a ripple effect after it's over.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
the big thing. Whether if I'm in a room singing,
yeah.
I don't want to leave and people go like, man, he's a good singer. He can
right.
hit high notes. That's not my objective.
Sure.
My objective is for a heart to be changed. And I
yeah.
know that this is the team around this movie. That is the objective, that people will think this is great. I mean, the producers of God's Not Dead are doing this
yeah.
movie. Kevin Sorbo's
yeah.
in it. You know, we have Emmy Award-winning actresses in it. Like,
sure.
excellence
yeah.
is awesome. Excellence in entertainment, it's part of it. But beyond that, a movement. I want to see these little girls and boys,
right.
their lives changed because somebody went and saw a movie.
Yeah. And I think that's a big deal. And I think one of the things that you're capturing so well, we're a culture, and we've always been this way, but I think more so now than ever, we're a culture that speaks in the language of story.
Mm-hmm.
And entertainment and media, I think we used to think of them as communication tools. I would argue now they're a language
yeah.
in and of themselves, right?
Yeah.
It's the way we speak to one another. And so I think you've got, what's exciting to me about this is you've got the ability to move people. It's not just theory. I mean, this is practice. People will be moved as mm-hmm. they are entertained and yet at the same time compelled to action. And so what's on the horizon next? You've got this new album. You've got this movie. God's using you
yeah.
in the voice. I mean, you know, it's not as if your life isn't full. But what's coming? I mean, what's God have for you coming in the future?
In the future, those things you mentioned, yeah. we've talked about, definitely. I love being able to do events with my sister, Priscilla
yeah,
Shire, and my
right.
dad. We're doing a prototype for a couple of events that are coming up in Florida called the Kingdom Family Conference.
Awesome.
And it's me,
yeah.
my dad, and my sister on the same stage
that's
for the first
incredible.
Time
that's
ever.
Cool. Yeah.
So that's new on the horizon. And then also just, again, the voice created opportunities outside of church. And I've been
yeah.
asked a lot to do corporate events. Like,
yeah, sure.
It just so happened, and then I got asked, because I'm a talent producer for The Voice, of, hey, do you know this person? So that's a whole nother realm of me being able to send out people who a lot of us have been on the show are also churchgoers.
Yeah, sure.
But now, absolutely, because of that connect to the mainstream world, we can go out and do these other events. And yeah, so it's that's also happening in conjunction with the movie and the record. And the
man, that's exciting. And see, what I love about this, Anthony, is what you're modeling for a lot of people is, I think, what needs to be the model for the church at large. I think in the past, when people felt like God was working in their lives and gifting them and they wanted to serve him, that meant jumping out of the mainstream world, you know, getting out of the working world, going into the ministry. Mm-hmm. And yet what you're modeling for us is exactly what I think Jesus is calling us to be a faithful follower of Jesus in the domains of society, influencing culture for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of his glory, right, and yet doing it in the various domains that every person lives in just as part of their normal everyday life. And so I hope in many ways your life becomes a pattern for others in what it looks like to live faithful lives.
Yeah, you know? As you actually explained that, I thought about, as random as it is, my mind thinks in metaphors and pictures, because I'm Tony Evans' kids, and that's how it goes. Every time we had a question in life, he came to us with a story. Yeah, just literally while you were telling me that, I thought about a bunch of lifeguards having all this skill, but jumping out of the water to all talk to each other.
Yeah, that's right,
and
exactly,
not getting back in. And
that's
I feel like we don't have all this information to not be in that water.
That's right.
So, guys, we're going to take a minute and go get in the water. We'll talk later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
There's some stuff we got to handle. Pertinent stuff we have to handle, and it's over there.
Yeah.
It's not here.
Praise God for your dad and for your influence who didn't say to you, you need to go be a worship pastor at a church somewhere, and that needs to be your identity.
Ugh.
But who have allowed you to be a worship leader, a worshiper, but who's engaging in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, I felt guilty going to... I'm sorry, we're
no,
almost
no.
done. I felt
no,
guilty going
it.
To... My first thought when I got asked to go to L.A. was guilt.
Yep.
Like, and my dad looked at me and said, as long as you don't compromise your faith, you get on that plane and you go to Christina Aguilera's house and hang out.
That's right. That's incredible. But man, what a great testimony and what a great opportunity the Lord's opening up for you. Man, thanks so much. If people want to kind of continue to follow the track of your life and what God's doing in your career, how can they do that online and through Twitter?
They can go to, you can go to anthony-evans.com, or Twitter is Anthony Evans Jr., or Instagram is also the same thing.
Yeah.
So
that's
pretty,
awesome.
Pretty easy.
Sweet. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. Thanks for talking to us a little bit about your music, movies, life, Jewel.
what an
incredible world that God has kind of put you in. But, man, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange. Read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange Radio has been presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.